O.J. Simpson, whose murder trial spurred debate over race and criminal justice, dies at 76. I said that like it's sad.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's not. You know, the thing is, the only thing I thought about that was how much fun, and nobody's going to do this, but how much fun if the funeral procession was a white Bronco followed by 1,000 police cars. That would,
oh my God.
That would be the best.
Can Al Cowlings, you know, just, please drive the hearse?
Right? That's what I'm saying. It's just a white Bronco with dead OJ in it, and then like 700 police cars with their flashers, and that's taking, that would make me laugh.
Oh my
Other
God.
Than that, I rest in peace, man.
I'm Don Hall.
And I'm David Himmel.
And this is the Literate ApeCast.
The Literate ApeCast uses bad words. If you don't like bad words, maybe you shouldn't listen to it.
You ever watch The Bear?
Yeah, it's I started watching it shortly after the divorce conversation.
Ah, okay.
And we were still sleeping in the same bed, and we were watching it together. And at one point I turned to her and I said, I don't know that I could watch the next season. And she was like, why? And I was like, it's the divorce show now.
It is.
And she was like, oh.
So you didn't watch the second season?
No, I did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, watch the second season. So when the third season comes out.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be watching it.
Oh, yeah.
Divorce show, fuck it.
The thing is, when I watched it because I didn't have Hulu and I didn't want to fucking pay for Hulu and all that kind of stuff. And in Wichita, kind of when I was at, I would, you know, at no point after I kind of got my shit together was I at my wit's end kind of thing. But I was just like, I was ridiculously bored. You know, the job wasn't hard and I didn't like, you know, I mean, my boss was a fucking Trump piece of shit. Anyway.
I didn't know that. At the radio station?
Yeah, yeah. The general manager that didn't like me.
Oh, I had
He didn't like me because he was a big MAGA guy. Oh. He didn't talk too much about it, but I was the guy that worked at NPR. I mean, it was, no question. But anyway,
Let's remember that NPR exists because of Richard Nixon.
Yes, that's exactly.
Right. Let's
not walk away from it. Anyway.
The EPA as well.
Whoa. But
Nixon was a great president.
He
wasn't that.
If I mean, he was a piece of shit. Crazy. Yeah.
He was a piece of shit. He was a war criminal. But
he did.
We got
the
EPA.
He did a lot of
PBS and NPR.
He actually was, for batshit crazy, he was a responsible leader. You know, he was a responsible leader.
I mean, not 100%.
No, but the guy was nuttier.
There was that whole Watergate
thing. He was nuttier than a fucking fruitcake. But,
I don't think he was nutty. I don't think he was nutty.
Oh,
he was very smart.
No, but that doesn't...
He was paranoid.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He was batshit crazy. That doesn't mean he's not a smart guy. It just means that he was batshit crazy.
I just think the batshit crazy now, it was a different time then.
Yeah.
Nixon was the worst thing that ever happened in this country.
Yeah,
and now looking back, and it's like, it was him versus Trump in the primary. I'd vote for Nixon.
No shit. If he was still, no question. About
like
that.
I would loudly vote.
I would vociferously campaign for the corpse of Richard Nixon over fucking Donald Trump. No, but it's like, I was kind of that place, and I ended up. Getting Hulu, and because I'd heard so much about it, and I was missing Chicago, and I didn't, it was kind of a place. So I watched it, and what it did for me was, because it's so Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ, it makes Chicago, it's just the best Chicago. It might be, in my opinion, the single best television representation of Chicago I've ever seen.
I thought The Chi was pretty good.
The Chi is actually very good. But again, The Chi is very specific to the South Side.
Yeah.
What I like about the Bear is it's about the whole city.
Kind of neutral.
It's about the whole city. You see stuff. I mean, you know, there's stuff from all angles.
And Shameless was pretty good.
Shameless was very good, too. Yeah, that's true. And I like
another Jimmy Allen White.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so I watched it, and it really did give me a sense of, to quote Ebon from the second season, a sense of purpose, you know, and you know, his character, Richie, is just one of my favorites.
Oh my God.
He's just one of my favorites. However, and you and I have talked about this. You know, I went last 6 weeks. I've been in Chicago. I've been going around seeing storytelling shows, and with the intent, this was all self-imposed, of getting myself out there. And then all of a sudden it hit me. First of all, I told a story on a stage and it was fun, and I know I nailed the story, and it was a good story. It's from the Casino book. I could see the audience, you know, on the edge of their seat kind of thing. So I knew I was winning the day, that kind of thing. But I got off and I was like, all right, I'm done. You know, people were nice. And I was just like, that was kind of uninspiring. I don't know what that is.
Like sex when you don't come.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. It was like, sex is always pretty good, but when you don't shoot the load, it kind of feels incomplete. And so I went, and then I got to think about it, said, yeah. And then I kind of was like, all right, I'm not going to tell stories. And then wait a minute. And so, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to watch it again because of that. I just decided I wanted to watch again. Because, you know, when you get drunk, you do terribly irresponsible things. Mm-hmm. And when I get drunk, I renew my Disney Plus and Hulu subscription. So that's what I do on a drunk, you know. I mean, yeah, that's
maybe in my 50s. That's,
yeah, maybe that's an age thing.
Smarter decisions like that.
Or dumb decisions, but are not...
safer.
Yes. But anyway, so I've been watching the Bear again, and I love this show. But there's a scene in the... I'm going to select... maybe it's the second episode of the second season where he and Sydney are trying to cook, you know, they're trying to create their new menu, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And everything they make tastes like shit. And he just looks at her and goes, our palates are fucked.
Mm-hmm.
We got to go out and get inspired, right? Mm-hmm. And the other night I was watching and that popped up and I went, that's what's going on. My palate is fucked. Mm-hmm. I don't have nothing artistic out there is inspiring me because I've spent at least, even when you consider Vegas, at least 5 years in the absence of any real culture. You know, I mean,
well, in the absence of any real art that inspires you.
Yeah.
Culture is,
well, yeah, culture is different. Yeah. That's
inspiring to you.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wasn't focused on the seeing of things. I wasn't curious about anything going on around me. I was only thinking about what can I contribute to that culture. And that released me. And so I realized, oh, that's what I got to do right now. I got to go. My palate is fucked. So let's calm down. Let's go see some shows. Let's go see some bands. You know, I mean, I'm going to have the greatest summer in terms of just, I mean, blues fest, jazz fest, the orchestra, fucking house, all this, you know, I'm going to be surrounded by music and I'm going to be working, but I am going to take the time while I'm working to enjoy an experience of it because my palate's fucked. And I need to find inspiration. And I was thinking this morning that you and I are in a very different tracks, but similar direction kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And so if you were to cleanse your palate, if your palate's fucked like mine.
Yeah.
What's the MO? What's the plan to then reinvigorate your inspiration?
It's to see more art. The most simple way that I do this is I'll go to a bookstore and I will often go to a big bookstore. I'll go to, sorry, Volumes Cafe and Bookstore if you're listening, but I will go to a Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, well, that's because Volumes has 7 books. They have 7 whole right. fucking books and then a lot of coffee and lesbians. So you go to Barnes & Noble where they have a lot of books because that's what a bookstore
There's a
have.
Lot of books.
Yeah.
And... yeah, and it's just, it's big, and it's, and I love in small, privately owned indie bookstores. Love them. And I get inspired there as well. My first go-to is the big one.
Yeah, be surrounded.
Because and I don't feel, maybe part of it is that I feel a little superior. Maybe. I need to... work that one out. But yeah. So go to a bookstore. And then, yeah, go see plays, go see shows, go see concerts, go see some art. Like this weekend is the
Art Expo.
Expo. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to
go. That's the thing is, I was thinking about going and the tickets are $45.
I know.
The thing about it is, I got a catalytic converter coming from eBay.
Yeah.
I got another catalytic converter clamp. It's a different one than the one I had before.
Which will just be useless in a different way.
It might be useless, you know, and if they indeed break through that, steal it, I hope it's the same guys, and they just leave it sitting on the curb to say, fuck you, Don.
Yeah.
You tried, fail, whatever, but, you know, and then, so I don't know how much, it's not going to cost me that much, but it's like, yeah, so money's a little tight, and that's okay. But $45, I can't afford that.
Yeah.
Right now. I mean, I could afford it, but I don't want to spend the money.
But that's it. I mean, you got to get out and find the stuff that inspires you. And because we've talked a little bit about this before, and I've been thinking about it. Like, I have, similar to you, like, I've not been getting inspired by stuff. Because I've been, and this is, it's not a negative thing. I'm not dogging my job.
It's life. It's just life.
Partly on me, I guess. But, you know, my time, my ability to go out and find this stuff is limited because I've got kids to put to bed or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's just limited. And one of the benefits, as unfortunate as it is, it's still a positive thing, is that with the division of the kids, now 50-50, I've got time that's...
You're going to have time.
I've got restorative time that's just for me. So on those weekends or those nights that I don't have the kids, instead of sitting at home thinking, I wish my kids were here.
Yeah, or drinking yourself.
Like, I'll go out and catch a show, or I'll go to Barnes & Noble.
Uh-huh.
Maybe on the way home, I'll swing by Volumes and get a coffee. maybe a pair of Ruth Bader Ginsburg socks. And a pair of Birkenstocks.
There you go. And pick up on, and hit up on a lesbian.
But I'll ask her. Your beard looks great. What kind of oil do you use?
See, your beard. I'm just gonna go up and say,
being an ass.
Hey, have you seen Chasing Amy? That's what I'll say. Have you seen the movie Chasing Amy? And then see, and if there's a flash of recognition, this is a lesbian that might have sex with me. You know, I mean, you know, that's the game. It's like if you've got a Kevin Smith reference.
Yeah.
And you know, come on.
I love in that movie, and this is just now hitting me. Like, why this is funny now is the part where I can't remember her character's name, but the main character, she is talking about her new love interest, her new lover, and the other lesbians are like, why are you using the pronoun
name? Yeah,
and they're like, and then they realize it's not a she anymore because she's using their and them, they, and that it's a man.
Yeah, Holden, when she says
she's Holden. Yeah, yeah,
what's their name? Holden. And there's just like, it's like a record scratch.
Yeah.
All the lesbians
like get up and leave the room.
No, they all sit there and they just get this pissed off look. And one of them pours a shot and says, another one bites the dust.
That's what it is. Boom. Yeah. That's a great movie.
Yeah, it is
a great
movie. You know, it doesn't age as well as I would like it to, but it's still very funny.
Well, it's very...
And
not like, I don't want to say it's homophobic.
It's a little homophobic.
In one of the characters. Like, well, I don't think the whole movie is homophobic. Yeah, no. But Jason Lee character.
Part of it is, it's just, intent. You know, the characters.
I think it worked because it's to prove his point.
Like, one of the things that reminds me, I hadn't made this connection till this conversation, but it's one of my three things. I saw a play last night, and one of the characters is so frustratingly stupid. Like
written that way or just...
It's written that way. Okay. No, it's written that way. And how you want to decide, and when we get to that, I'll tell you a little bit, but that's one of the things I feel about Holden, is Holden has all the opportunity, he has all the answers right in front of him. And at the end, he comes in and says, I have the answer, we have to sleep together.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the dumbest single fucking... You don't deserve your friend or the hot lesbian.
She calls him on it.
I know, but yeah. But this is his big, and you watch him thinking, and he's out with the swing
so
set,
sure.
And he's like, he's so thinking sure about what he's got to do, and then he comes in, and it is the single stupidest thing. There's a, it's frustrating because it's like, as a viewer, you want to go, are you fucking nuts?
Yeah.
I hate your guts now. I think you're a stupid ass. I was on the track where you were kind of like the hero of the film, and now I think you're dipshit.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's the most realistic portrayal of a person. I mean, it's just, yeah, we're stupid. We come up with really stupid solutions.
Makes you an idiot.
Yeah. It's really very funny. My, I agree with you with the thing of art. It's, you know, I've been looking at hot ticks. It's like, I haven't sat in a room, watched theater in like a really long time.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize until recently that I really fucking missed that. Now I do have to get over the fact that it doesn't matter what play I see.
Yeah.
If there's an attractive woman in it, I'm gonna while I'm watching the play, I'm enjoying the play, but I'm probably gonna fixate a little bit. Like, you know.
Your libido is alive and well.
Yeah. Well, there was a moment in the play last night where the one woman in the play, who was very cute, accuses Netflix, who's lecturing, and but she says, "All you're doing, you just keep looking at my tits. You just keep looking at my tits." And I kind of wanted to raise my hand. I go, "Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
This whole fucking time, they're doing a monologue. I'm looking at your tits. I'm sorry. That's way." But I have to do that someday.
Yeah.
And everybody looks around and says, "I'm looking at her tits too."
Jesus Christ.
No, I didn't do that. But yeah, no, going and seeing stuff. I want to go see some local DJs. I'm looking for, again, art costs money. It's sort of like the culinary fixation. It just costs more money. And I can buy a can of soup for $3. If I want to make a pork tenderloin, you know, with fennel, that's going to be a little more expensive. However, it's worth it.
And the way the Democrats are driving up the price on fennel right now.
Yeah, I know shit. Like, the fennel? Fuck off, Biden.
Yeah. Yeah. That, You'd think that fennel killed his wife and kid.
So, all right. So, yeah, that's the commitment. We're going to, our palates are fucked. We're going to cleanse our palate. Yeah, I'm going to go. I kind of tapped myself out in March with storytelling shows. Because now I have nothing but hate in my heart for storytelling shows right now. And it's just because the thing is, what I don't want, this is what I don't want. And it's why I want to go see theater that of people I don't know. And you know, and some I do, but is what I don't miss about the storytelling scene is the politicking, the branding, the preening, look at me.
Yeah.
And all the arts has some of that, right?
Of course.
I mean, yeah. It makes sense. But it's very transparent in the storytelling scene right now. And I find it gross. I find it disgusting and I don't want to be around it.
Is that it feels very antithetical to what the storytelling scene claims to be about, which is bringing people together, connecting us through our stories, through our experiences, shared relational, all that stuff. And it, when you introduce the competition,
yeah,
and you promote the branding of things and you keep hiring or bringing on the same people,
yeah,
it feels really inauthentic.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And
it feels gross.
And I've said this for a long time.
It's lazy.
Performances feel inauthentic.
Well,
you sit down and tell a story, you don't tell the story like, "I was at home last night with my child. We were reading at bedtime."
Yeah.
"And he got very upset because I wanted to read a book he didn't want to read." And it's like, no,
well, to
just
me,
tell the fuck, like,
every story feels this is what like, every story feels like in the story. And I'm, like I said, I saw 8 storytelling shows in March.
Yeah.
And the boilerplate is, "When I was 23, I was a waitress at Waffle House."
Yeah.
Bah, bah, bah. And at the end, it's, "And here's the lesson you need to know."
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and I don't know if we've talked about it on this, but it's apparently this guy is a terrible racist, but I didn't know that. I didn't care. But it was a viral video on Instagram that made me laugh. It's just this sort of like, probably my age now I think about it. I've been in my mind thinking, oh, it's a really old man. Mm-hmm. I'm a really old man. Okay, so yeah, that makes sense. But anyway, basically says, "I went to a convenience store the other day and buy some Reese's peanut butter cups. I got some beer instead. Moral of the story, I like titties." And I laughed. And I laughed, first of all, is the template for the stories I've been seeing.
Uh-huh.
Number two, I agree with everything he said in that little short story. Mm-hmm. Like Reese's peanut butter cups, yep. Like beer better, yep. And I do like titties. Yeah. It's just like, all right, everything about this little capsule.
Why can't man have all three?
Well, the thing is, that's what I kind of want to get on storytelling stages and just do that. End every story with moral story. I like titties. Just what done. That, you know, like, here's my story about my cancer and the tumor I had in my left ass cheek that I almost died. And then there was this hospice worker and his name was Bill and blah, blah. Moral of the story, I like titties.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do.
When I was in the Second City writing program, I had, and if ever I had trouble, like, finding an ending, you know, finding that button for the sketch.
Yeah.
I'd goat fucker. That was just so like wherever it would go. And then like the last time we'd goat fucker. I didn't know where to take it.
Yeah.
So I like bring it to class and we'd read it through. And it became this running gag that, you know, like David's going to write a goat fucker piece. Yeah. And then one time I just wrote an actual sketch that properly ended. The right button for it was goat fucker.
Yeah.
So eventually you get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think, I mean...
See, when I'm writing fiction, I'm finding my fiction is getting very, very weird and dark.
Good.
I haven't decided if it's good. I think they're entertaining. I'm enjoying it because the way I write fiction is I don't think out. Because when I try to think out what the story is going to be before I've written it, I usually fuck myself. It usually gets way too overstructured. It's like, all right, this doesn't work for me. I don't like writing like that. You know, that's how I write essays.
Yeah.
But that's not how fiction works for me. So I just start writing.
I'm the exact opposite.
Okay, that's funny. Because I just start writing, and unfortunately, instead of goat fucker, the ending of many of my stories tend to naturally become Ned Beatty in Deliverance, and it's a violent rape scene, or it's something hyper-violent and really horrifying, and I'm like... Okay, because that's things when I realized it's like, I kind of was reading through. I was like, is there something wrong? Am I in a bad place right now? Because I don't feel like I'm in a bad place, but like three of my stories, you know, I told you the story about the slice of cheese woman.
No.
Oh, fuck. Basically, I wrote a story about thing about promising one young woman. And this was one of those examples where I was like, oh, I have an idea. Oh, fuck. And this is why I don't know if I should put my name on my fiction. Is this story of a young woman. She's a TikTok. She wants to be an influencer. So it's a setup that she wants to be an influencer. Her roommate has far more followers than she does. She doesn't know what to do. She sees the movie Promising Young Woman and gets an idea. Mm-hmm. But she's also been watching viral videos of parents when their babies are crying and freaking out, throwing slices of Kraft cheese on their faces. Have you seen these?
No.
This is a real thing where it's like the baby's, eh! And then they just kind of slap a piece of cheese on their forehead and the baby just goes, huh? Like totally. What? It's hysterical. It's stupid. But it's a whole thing. So
that's the best.
I don't know if it's the best. But anyway, it's a whole.
I'm here to judge other parents.
Yeah, it's a whole industry. It's a whole industry. Whole industry on YouTube of influencers throwing cheese on people's faces.
Oh, my God.
But the story is she wants it. She sees promising young women. She's watching these videos of the cheese slapping, and she gets an idea. So she goes to a bar. Sluts herself up, gets all nice and titties and the other, and she tries to pick up a strange dude with the intent of if he gets like promising a woman, if he thinks she's drunk and decides to take advantage of her, that she's going to hit him in the face with cheese and then do a TikTok of it. And instead she meets a guy that takes her out in the alley and is going to fucking rape her.
Yeah.
And she throws the cheese at his face and he rapes her anyway. And the last thing she sees before she dies is is the cheese falling off his face onto hers.
Jesus Christ.
And she gets very calm like a baby. It's a fuck. I'm telling you, this shit is so right.
I like
it's
that.
Going in weird directions.
That is dark.
It's so fucking dark.
But it's fucking weird. You know, but that's the thing is I've spent the last couple of weeks thinking, what do I want to do? How do I want to live what does my career look like? What does my artistic career look like?
What's my love life look like?
What does any of this look like?
What does my parenting look like now? All of it. Yeah, all of it's up in flux.
So I was thinking about the artistry, and it's like, do I want to keep pursuing a professional career, like a creative director, as my main thing, because then I'm making money doing the thing I love, being creative. I'm getting paid well to be a creative and use my brain.
Yeah.
But it doesn't satiate me.
No.
So if I like put that aside, like just forget, like if there's a great job that presents itself,
sure. Creative director, oh, fine. Yeah.
But if there's another kind of job that's going to pay what I need it to pay, that is, let's just sales.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Do I take that, figure that out, and then I can, all the creative shit, like I want to do weird stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm fine to have people edit me and workshop it. And like,
sure.
It's not that I just want to do what I want to do and not have everyone tell me that they need to change this because it's not right. No, that's, I'm all about collaboration and editing and direct. If I write a play, I have a director,
when your career is creativity, you don't have the bandwidth to swing for the fucking fences otherwise.
Right. And it also doesn't, it's the bandwidth and then like the output, like you can be proud of the work you do, but is it the weird thing you want to do? Maybe sometimes, but no, like, and it's not that I want to write super weird shit or create super weird shit, but I just want to have the room to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a story that I started writing in college. It was a screenplay that I started about a young girl she's in high school and her dad is a theater teacher and she wants to be a great theater actor and she sucks. She's no good. She's always had a role as like in The Wizard of Oz, she was one of the moving trees, you know, like kind of like a background chorus member kind of thing. And it's her senior year and she is going to get the lead role. And it's a scene or it's a play where I'm trying to remember exactly what it was now, but like the main character experiences a rape. And so she wants the part so badly.
What is our thing about it? It's the worst thing. It's like the worst. It's so terrible. Like going back to Deliverance, that movie is really about men and how they relate to each other. And most of that movie is not a rape, but once the hillbilly fucks Ned Beatty in the ass, that sight is so violating and so awful.
That's what the movie is about. That, you ask, have you seen Deliverance? No, that rape movie, right?
That's the thing. It's an act of violence. It's an act of humiliation, and that's, it's a horrifying thing. So maybe that's why it's the worst thing.
Like desperation makes you stupid. So here's this young woman who, she's going to get the lead role, and she's been method her entire life. When she was she studied in the forest. She became totally method. Shit. So she's going to go out and try and get herself raped so she can bring that to the character and fully understand the character.
Oh, fuck.
And yeah, so I went back to revisit it and was like, should I pull this back up and tweak it? Because it could be really funny and really make a point about
what we can do is you do that story. I'll do my cheese story. We'll do a bunch of stories like this and then we'll put it in a volume called Himmel and Hall Seem to Be Obsessed with Rape. And that's the name of the book.
Yeah. And what I like about that title is that it's not exactly on the nose.
No.
So it's curious enough to be like, well, what do you mean?
Yeah. What do you mean? And then they read all these stories and they all end up with, it's not goat fucker. It's somebody's getting fucked.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's, what we like to do is kill the sacred cows.
Yeah.
That's one.
Yep.
Two is, where's the laugh?
Yep.
And where's the thing that makes you think about, like, turning some shit on your head or on its head?
Yeah.
And so you look at it differently. And that's,
you break it down in a nice way. What I just say is, I don't give a fuck what I do. I just want it to be cool. And I know what is, for me, what is cool and what is not. And there's so much shit that's not cool that I just want to do the thing that's cool. So whatever, it's like I told you, and this is going to be a Literate Ape show. So just look forward to this in the future. We're going to do the real life dating game. It's like, just like the 60s dating game, you know, Chuck Barris created it. But what we're going to do is it'll be like, okay, here's the suitor, right? Here's the three, you know, potential dates, and they're kind of covered, you know, they're like, there's a screen so he or she can't see them. Except what I want to do is I want to get a Palestinian man and three Zionist women, and that's the dating game, and they have to go on the date. Or I want to get like an openly unapologetic transphobe and three transgender women and not tell them, and they do the dating game with all the sexual innuendo, and then all of a sudden, here comes, you know, I want to get like a TikTok influencer who is completely obsessed with beauty and things, and get the three giant, ugliest, fattest, toothless motherfuckers I can find. You know, because that is, that's some funny shit.
Yeah. I mean, art for art's sake and getting the laugh and what, yeah, what's it going to do? Like, we juxtaposition and things. Like, yeah, there's so much. And now we have to worry about, like, well, is it offensive?
I don't care. In fact, if it is, I want it to be offensive.
I'm fine with offending people. I don't want to be offensive. You know, like, I don't want to, like, purposely, like, I'm going to just piss people off on purpose. I kind of want to tweak their nipples a little bit, make them think a little harder, laugh uncomfortably sometimes to prove a point.
This is a difference between you and I.
About it.
You, when you say, get, you know, where's the laugh?
Yeah.
You're looking for the audience to laugh. And when I say, where's the laugh? I'm looking for myself to laugh. I don't give a shit the audience laughs. Is it funny to me?
Yeah.
Then let's ride the train.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see how that works out, because thankfully you have a governor in your life, which is me, because I'm not letting you do blackface.
You say that now.
I will say it then too. I will say it forever.
Could I go with, like, olive green face?
No, you cannot go olive green face. There is no version of any kind of face other than yours.
But wait a minute. Blue Man Group is blue face.
But there aren't blue people. Well, there's sad people.
Yeah.
Who have the blues. But if sad people can play the fucking drums like that and splatter paint everywhere, that's a great thing. It's a good representation. So if you did blackface where, like,
They go to the good schools. There's no good way to do blackface.
And they get hired for the good jobs.
And so at the end of the day,
and the cops don't shoot them.
I just,
then, okay, fine, maybe.
Maybe the last thing she sees is the cheese falling off his face and realizing he's a white guy in blackface. That is the way to kind of heighten.
It's like when Kim Basinger throws water on Jack Nicholson's face when he's in Batman, when he's painted in the...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And now, War Sack of the News.
In buying votes is not illegal when the president does it. Biden to forgive $7.4 billion more in student loan debt for 277,000 borrowers.
Yeah. You know, first of all, college shouldn't be as fucking expensive as it is. Second of all, The reason we have such a giant divide in this country in terms of culture is that the people that are running one side of the culture are all college educated assholes. And the people that are on the other side of it are all dumb fuck uneducated assholes.
Yeah.
And to forgive to me, that is just like the worst. In terms of where the Democrats are in this country, which is they've lost, whatever you want to call it, the working class. They've lost that non-college educated, which is about 60%, maybe 70% of the country.
Yeah.
To then court kids going to college for gender studies and philosophy majors. The cost is not, it does not message well to that other 60 or 70%.
Yeah.
So it's just...
But it's also not just theater majors and gender studies.
It's doctors and lawyers, and, like, we need more fucking lawyers. But, you know, the bottom line is I think it's in this campaign, I understand trying to court the youth vote. I think that is...
It's a smart move.
I don't think it's a smart move, because the youth isn't what's going to get him in. Historically, the youth doesn't vote. Historically, just because they voted in the last election in record numbers for them, historically, that's a blip. for years, for 100 years, the youth have not come out to vote.
I think it's buying goodwill for the future, though.
Well, all right. That's, I don't know if it's buying goodwill.
I mean, frankly, this, like, the people that are voting or that are getting forgiven, they're in their 30s and 40s at this point, yeah, too. So they are voting. It's not just 20-year-olds.
I don't think it buys them anything. Ask yourself this. Have you ever had, has anybody ever owed you money and you just said, don't worry about it, and they were suddenly much nicer to you? No, they're just going to keep coming back to you and borrowing money because they know you're not going to ask for it back.
Yeah, I've never had that before. Well, no. Ziegler owed me money, but then he died. And he hasn't paid me back. He also hasn't asked for more money.
Well, okay. So there's that. All right, that's fair.
And he also got away with killer physical comedy in Naked Gun. O.J. Simpson, whose murder trial spurred debate over race and criminal justice, dies at 76. I said that like it's sad.
Yeah, but yeah, it's not. You know, the thing is, the only thing I thought about that was how much fun, and nobody's going to do this, but how much fun if the funeral procession was a white Bronco followed by 1,000 police cars.
Oh my God.
That would be the best.
Can Al Cowling's police drive the hearse?
Right? That's what I'm saying. It's just a white Bronco with dead OJ in it, and then like 700 police cars with their flashers, and that's taking, that would make me laugh.
Oh my
Other
God.
Than that, rest in peace, man.
I want to start a GoFundMe to like have that happen, or petition or something, because that's brilliant. In It's Official, the universe is broken and we're all fucked. Where do you find the best Chicago-style pizza? Yelp says it's in California.
Well, you know,
so
Yelp can go fuck themselves.
Here's the thing. Michael's Original Pizzeria and Tavern in Uptown.
Sure.
I've never been.
I have.
Was the only Chicago pizzeria to break into the top 10 on the list.
Well, the thing is, okay, now what's weird about this, because Yelp came out, and maybe they're just fucking with people, because when I was in Wichita, they did, I don't know if it was a Yelp, but they did like a national survey of pizza, and Pequod's Pizza in Chicago was rated the best pizza in America.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as I'm concerned, everybody go fuck themselves. That's it. That's the list I'm going with. And I'm an old man and I am set my ways. Fuck you. Pequod's the best pizza in America. Okay. And it's not Chicago deep dish pizza. They call it deep dish pizza. Pequod's is a pan pizza. It's different, but they call it deep dish because who the fuck cares? Branding.
Marketing. Yeah. Branding. Yeah. Yeah. In where were these toys when Rust was being filmed? Illinois police fear people will mistake students' water gun game for a genuine threat. So, this is a story from The Guardian.
Okay.
There's this game where high school students will put on ski masks and target each other with water guns that look like firearms in what they call a senior assassins game. Now, here's a picture. I know this is not a visual
medium.
That
looks like a real fucking gun.
That's a squirt gun.
That looks like a motherfucking
real gun.
That looks
real as fuck.
Okay, what I would say is if you are, these are like high school students?
Yeah.
Okay, what I would say is if you're a high school student and you think having a water pistol that looks authentically like a real fucking gun, complete with the duct tape, so that your fingerprints don't get on it, and then you put fucking ski masks on, you don't think you're going to die, then you're too stupid to live, and they should die. Because those are the people that are too stupid to live. That's what the Darwin Awards are all about.
Here was my thought on that. I agree.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, like, why would they do this? And to our earlier conversation, it's taking their tragedy and turning it into something that they can control. These kids are growing up with the threat and the fear of school shootings. I know they don't happen every day or all the time, but it's like it's more common than it has been. And
the news makes
every
it
school
yeah it's like
a lockdown
epidemic.
Drill and
in the park, we've got to do active shooter training.
Active shooter, thank you.
All that shit.
So I think where this is coming from is this, like, here's this terrible thing that lives inside of us, this constant fear and anxiety that lives with us. Let's make it weird again. I mean, I think that's what it is. It's them taking their potential trauma, their fear, and controlling it.
All right, but
it's still stupid.
It's the dumbest fucking thing.
Coming from.
Yeah, it's the dumbest fucking thing I ever heard. I understand it. Maybe not the dumbest, but it's right up there with dumb. And so if you get there and suddenly a cop shoots you because you're waving around, it looks like a fucking gun. It does not look like.
What if some kid is like, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to bring a real gun?
Yeah,
and take out that Don Hall
motherfucker. And say it's a squirt gun.
It's a squirt gun. This, and then boom, Don Hall's dead. This kid is.
It's a terrible. Yeah. It's a terrible idea.
In Michael J. Fox shakes a finger at the younger generation. Shakes a finger.
I know, I got okay. it.
Then laugh. Because that's funny. Parkinson's. Shakes a finger. Fuck off. Let me say it again, because I don't think you heard it right.
Oh, okay, maybe, yeah.
In Michael J. Fox shakes a finger at the younger generation. All right, one more time.
Okay.
In Michael J. Fox shakes a finger at the younger generation.
No, it's funny!
Michael J. Fox says, we used to bust our ass to be famous, and you had to be talented, but now it's, what's that dance step, and you're the most famous person in the world.
Well, Michael J. Fox, you've now become
an old man
shaking your fucking, wagging your finger at clouds, because I can tell you, plenty of people have gotten famous with zero talent and zero ability. For as long as there has been fame, there are lots and lots of people who are dumb asses who figured out a way to get the attention of people and get famous. And that predates YouTube. It predates television. It predates radio. That's always been the case.
Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep, great examples of, like, where's their talent?
No talent at all, you know? God damn it.
And finally, in Damn, but Lee Greenwood is still alive and kicking. Robert Shaw, gospel singer who helped create the modern GOP, dies at 94. He helped turn Georgia purple, was an early supporter of Newt Gingrich, and could light up a room with amazing grace.
You know,
have you heard of this guy?
Yes, I have actually.
Okay, I'd never heard of this
guy. No, I did. Well, it's because I did a deep dive probably 10 years ago on Newt Gingrich because I was just fascinated about how Congress became so dysfunctional.
And Newt Gingrich is a son of a bitch bastard.
Well,
he was brilliant.
He was the leader of that shit.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He started that fucking pattern. That pattern began. But I look at it this way. What that guy reminds me of. Have you and I ever done karaoke together?
No.
All right. One of my favorite things to do in karaoke, again, it's not about the audience's laugh. It's about whether I think it's funny. And what nothing makes me laugh harder, because I do it's not an Austin Butler good Elvis, but I do a pretty decent Elvis, right?
Yeah.
And what I love to do is to do American Trilogy, if they've got it. And what nothing's better. If you don't know American Trilogy, it starts, oh, I wish I was in the land of cotton. Look away, look away, Dixieland. Then it goes into all my trials, Lord. But then it ends with glory, glory, hallelujah, dum, bum. When I start that song, because nobody really knows it.
Right.
So when I start it, everybody's in the bar. Everybody's doing karaoke, and I start singing Dixie. Oh, the fucking room, the fucking atmosphere changes. And then my goal is, can I sing it well enough that by the time I get to the glory, glory, hallelujah, that I can win them over from the moment of Dixie. And that's what that guy, because he could.
Yeah.
He was
a
piece of shit. He was anti-homosexual in a big way.
Yeah.
He was anti-welfare. He didn't like Social Security. This guy was a real piece of shit, but boy, he could sing Amazing Grace.
Yeah.
And that's what I think about that one.
Art changes minds.
And now... quote of the week to ponder as you consider life's most pressing choices.
This is from Studs Terkel.
Oh.
Work is about a search for daily meaning as well as daily bread, for recognition as well as cash, for astonishment rather than torpor, in short, for a sort of life rather than a Monday through Friday sort of dying.
That's a long one. Read it again.
Work is about a search for daily meaning as well as daily bread, for recognition as well as cash, for astonishment rather than torpor, in short, for a sort of life rather than a Monday through Friday sort of dying.
Hmm. I mean, that goes against everything we were just saying.
No, it doesn't.
That sounds like your work. Get the money. Get the acknowledgement. Get the joy. Get all the things you want from your art, from your work.
No, okay, I can see where you're coming from that. I don't take it that way. What I take about it is work should be something that is not so demeaning and so small and so uninspiring that you feel like dying every day. And it's got to be, because I don't think you have to get your inspiration from your work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can manage to find your inspiration for your work, then you're going to be a happier person.
Yeah.
I don't think that's always realistic. I don't think ever since Henry Ford created the fucking, assembly line, I don't think that has been a reality, which is why Studs Terkel wrote the quote, because, and that comes from working, is that work can be a grind. It's like laundry. You just keep having to fucking do it.
Yeah.
But if you never have that moment that your underwear smells good, then you never go back and do laundry again. So it's like, it's just a thing you have to do. It doesn't. And again, back to your point, I find when I had the most interesting jobs, they resulted in good art.
Yeah.
Example. When I worked at the casino, my life fell apart in Vegas. But when I worked at the casino, I really liked that job. Mm-hmm. It was about, not so much, recognition's not really my thing, but it was money. I did find daily meaning. I had purpose. And when I left, I wrote a book that I'm quite pleased with.
Yeah.
And it still fuels that. So I think, I like that quote. And it was making me think about what you're going through and what I'm always going through. Because that's the thing is, you've been jobless a few times. I've very rarely been jobless, but I bounce around from job to job and I'm always living check to check.
Yeah.
Always been my life, always going to be my life. And I'm 100% fine with that.
There are six things you should do this week.
My first thing to do this week is a watch. I have not watched it yet, but it will be on my, it's on my list to do this weekend. It's on Netflix. This is from 2023, but I think it's new to Netflix. Called Baby Reindeer. It's a Scottish TV series. And I watched the trailer and it seems really funny.
Is this a kid thing? Like for Harry or is this?
No.
Okay. This is like,
so this
okay.
is like, it's a comedian, the trailer that I saw, like he's working at a coffee shop and this woman walks up, she orders coffee and says that she's a lawyer and she's got her own firm and she works for like Tony Blair and all the big wigs in, the UK. Shows him her phone and has all the like Tony Blair's number in there and all this other shit. And then it turns out that she's like grifting him or lying about things because she can't afford the coffee. And they've engaged in this kind of codependent relationship and things just spiral out of control.
Oh, that sounds
so
very
it looks
interesting.
Really interesting and really funny. So I recommend it.
Without having seen it.
That's only fair. Because like maybe we talk about it next week. I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
I'll check it out. Absolutely. My first thing I were to mention is I think everybody should rewatch The Bear. Both seasons. It is in my number one. It is high, as tense as each episode is, and intentionally so. It is, for me, incredibly inspirational. It's very Chicago. And it's the closest thing I have ever seen on television to a really gritty off-loop theater show.
Mm.
It feels, it's written like an off-loop. It plays like one. It's raw. It's just one of the best things I've ever seen. And I recommend it. If you've not seen it, watch it. If you have, watch it again.
Mm-hmm. My next thing is a read in the Atlantic. This is from Faith Hill. America is in its insecure attachment era.
Mm.
Discomfort with intimacy seems to be on the rise, and no one's quite sure why. Now, this is from a year ago.
Yeah.
But it still feels appropriate.
Yeah.
So dig it up. It's available. There's no paywall for it. But it's interesting. I mean, it talks about the psychology of the, what's it called? Like attachment theory.
Yeah.
And the different versions of attachment theory and the attachment styles. But yeah, it's very interesting about the psyche of why we're all just like pulling away from each other.
I will read that. That's good. My second thing is also a read, and I'm a little late to the game here, but what I realized was, cause I have about a 45 minute train ride in the morning downtown and 45 minutes back. And I don't want to sit on my fucking phone cause everybody's sitting on their fucking phone. And I found that people wouldn't sit next to me because I was staring out the window smiling. So I guess that apparently that's creepy. I get it. I'm just having I'm just having a good time. Sitting on the L and smiling apparently is verboten.
That guy's crazy.
Peed his seat, which is very possible. I might have. So I started reading books, because I'm, they're big.
Tell us what a book is.
Well, yeah. I mean, but if you're standing on the aisle, if you don't get a seat and you have to stand, it's really difficult to kind of like
stand. The 80s were tough, man.
And read. So I realized, I still have my Kindle. I haven't pulled my Kindle out in forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, this is super small, perfect, reads fine. I like it. I can hold it in one hand like a phone, but I'm actually reading a book. And then I went, what do I want to read? I highly recommend Cinema Speculation by Quentin Tarantino. I am having a great time reading this book.
Yeah.
It is smart. It's funny. It's making me think. It's really just sort of like sitting in a room with Quentin Tarantino and just letting him go off on fucking movies he remembers when he was a kid. It's making me want to watch Steve McQueen movies and some weird, like Russ Meyer shit. And just like, it's like, this is great. He does a whole chapter about sort of like this B-list LA Times critic who basically made Jonathan Demme's career.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he was basically assigned to do all the exploitation movies. Uh-huh. Nobody else wanted to do them. Nobody liked them. And according Quentin Tarantino, most of those, if they were like a legit like critic, they hated the movies so much. They felt so superior to them that it read in the thing that they did not like this guy loved these movies. So he does a whole chapter on this one B-list critic who, because he loved Caged Heat, which was one of Jonathan Demme's, it's like his second movie. He loved it so much, it pretty much ushered him into the studio system, And it's like, what I loved about it was Quentin Tarantino knows people are going to buy his book.
Yeah.
And they know they're going to read the book about, Don Siegel and Dirty Harry and Steve McQueen and Ally McGraw, all this stuff. People can read it. But he takes the time to have a whole chapter just about this fucking dude. Just like this B-list critic. And I was like, that's very cool. That's very cute.
If you don't want to read the book and you want to know what movies Quentin Tarantino liked or was inspired by, just watch his movies.
All his movies,
they're so, all in there. They never feel reductive or duplicative or...
No.
Like he's ripping anybody off, but the influence is
strong.
Kung Fu, spaghetti western. The thing is,
you can when you read this book, you know exactly what he likes about those movies, and why he likes. And one of my favorite things is that he is. And it kind of goes to the heart of what we were talking about earlier with fiction. He loves the violent ending Yeah. He and like he talks about movies that ended that he wanted to end violently and didn't.
Yeah.
And why that works for him and why it's, you know,
movies does he not end violently?
No, not his movies.
Oh, okay.
Other movies, because basically this this is something I want you to think about, and I don't know if you know you're going to co-parent, so whatever. But one of the things, that I really love, because I didn't have exactly the same kind of, he's only like 4 years older than me, but I didn't have exactly the same kind of upbringing. Mm-hmm. But one of the things in the first couple of chapters, he pretty much reveals he was watching really inappropriate movies for his age. I mean, like from the fucking beginning was watching double bills of shit that nobody would bring their kid to.
Yeah.
And didn't really understand everything, but he loved that he got to be in the room with adults. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things he says. He says, I got to see, if I was cool and I didn't complain, I got to observe, this is what adults do when they're not around children. Mm-hmm. This is what makes them laugh. Mm. This is how they behave. It's a really fucking great thing. So one of the things I was thinking about, we were talking about this off mic, I suggest... Don't, because, you know, I'm sure Harry is way into the weeds with all the fucking children's programming that comes out and all the Blues Clues and, or, you know, whatever that fucking bullshit is, right? Let's watch a Pixar movie. I suggest...
What, like WALL-E?
WALL-E is not a children's movie.
It's a Pixar movie.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's
Pixar. Yeah, it's Pixar movie. And you know what I'm saying. But what I'm suggesting is if you go see a play that is not like... super rape or super violent or super gross or super foul, it's an adult play, mm-hmm. Tank Harry. And just make sure he gets to ask questions before and he gets to ask questions after, mm-hmm. but just watch.
Yeah.
He will learn more about taking Harry to a production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Yeah.
Is going to give him more good questions, mm-hmm. and interesting life experience,
yeah.
than all the fucking bullshit children's theater you could ever take him to.
I mean, there's a...
Disney on Ice, go fuck yourself.
I agreed. And, you know, there's a parenting approach, which I 100% subscribe to. Not catering their life or creating a life for them that is all around kids stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we watch a lot of kids movies, and most of them aren't bad.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen a lot of really good movies that I wouldn't watch if I didn't have kids.
Yeah, it's fine.
And it's things like, you know, take your kids out and run errands with them. And, like, do stuff that adults do and bring the kids along so they can see what that life is like.
Just
and
so
see
you
what
know,
that world is
when I'm babysitting him, the first thing we're going to watch is Taxi Driver.
Dude, that would be great. I'm trying to get him... First of all, he is 100% convinced... that he wants to watch Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, but you need to watch the first Ghostbusters first because...
Then you understand, yeah.
He's like, no, that's too scary for me. And I'm like, I guarantee you...
That this other one's going to
be scary. This one's going to be scary too.
Yeah.
He made a thing at school, like, I have a dream. It wasn't a Martin Luther King thing. It was just like, what do you want? What is your dream, fantasy, whatever? And he said he wants to travel back in time. And I was like, that's awesome. Let's watch Back to the Future. Because I was about your age when this movie came out, and I couldn't have been much older,
yeah.
if not the same age when I watched it, and I loved it.
It's one of my perfect films.
It's a perfect film.
Well, it is one of my perfect films in the book that I'm working on, so yeah.
But he won't do it.
Because you loved it.
No, he just, like...
He wants to be able to decide
for himself.
Things,
and he wants to be able to decide for himself.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
just, that's
I'm
being,
working
that's
on
being
it. I'm
sick.
Not pushing it too hard, but yeah.
All right.
All right, my third thing this week, it's another watch, and it's Watch Chasing Amy. I'm sorry, I was inspired by our talk. It's such a good movie. It's so funny. Does it age? Because I haven't watched it in a while.
I watched it.
And I
want
to see how it has aged.
Yeah, the only reason it was front of my mind was that it came out on Paramount Plus, and I caught it. I was just sitting, I was working on something, and I was just like, all right, what's on TV? And I saw it, and I went, I haven't fucking seen that movie in a long time. And so I just sat and watched it. And you know, there's, it doesn't, it, it's, It's a Kevin Smith film. Yeah. It's one of his early films. It's pudgy Ben Affleck, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It does work, but it doesn't.
There's a Matt Damon cameo in there too. Before Matt Damon was Matt Damon. This is all before Goodwill Hunting.
Yes, it does. It doesn't age well as a film, but it's still really fun.
I love the opening. I don't know if it's the opening. It's not the opening scene, but when they're doing the Q&A.
Oh yeah. And you've got the gay black man who has to play militant.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, and you take off Darth Vader's mask and reveal a crusty old white man. They try to tell us we all wants to be white.
Yeah.
And Jason Lee stands up and goes, well, isn't that true? Everybody asks, what's a Nubian? I swear.
I'm just telling you, there's a lot of great lines in it. Yeah, I agree. Funny. All right. And my third thing is, if you're in Chicago, if you're not in Chicago, this is going to appeal to you, but go see, they've just been extended. Go see Cock by Mike Bartlett. It's directed by Rin Wesner. It's at the Open Space Arts. I saw this last night. It's the first theater I've seen since coming back to Chicago. It is in a tiny 20-seat theater where all the chairs are around this red circle. And the play is basically, it's from 2009. The play is basically, you basically have Act One is a gay couple who are obviously, these two men are, they're just having, and it's so, the first act is them breaking up.
Mm.
They've been living together, they love each other, but it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Act two is this gay character, John, who's now on his own, hooking up with a woman. And realize, you know, like this is a woman he's seen, you know, they've seen each other constantly because they go to work the same direction, that kind of thing on the train. And it's a British, that was the one issue I had with it. I know artists get freaked out of when you update language in a play, but I would have updated the language in the play because it's got a lot of British colloquialisms that don't really play. I mean, if you're in Chicago, it doesn't take too much to change the tube to the L. You know what I mean? And yeah, I'm just saying, it just is one of those things to kind of keep it grounded where you're at, whatever. Because they don't do British accents. So it's like hearing somebody without a British accent call somebody else a wanker doesn't really play. Other than that, so he hooks up with her and they fall in love. And then he decides he can't decide who he wants to be with. So it's his ex-boyfriend suggests that they bring her and have a dinner party. And he has told both of them that he's going to commit to them. He's going to commit to the woman, tells her that, tells him, I'm going to dump the woman. And then you have this scene. And then the big surprise is that the ex-boyfriend brings his dad to the thing. I'm just telling you, it was great. It's very well directed. Everybody's pretty good. What's her name? Sonia Robinson plays the woman, just known as W in the script. She is remarkably good. I mean, she's just, you know, it's one of those things when you, and I haven't seen up close acting in so long.
Yeah.
You can see the acting happening with the other three. You can see the other three actors, the men in the play. You can see the acting. You can see that she's so good that you could see the acting, but it didn't feel like acting.
Yeah.
The way she read lines, she just was really, but overall, super fun. You can get tickets, half price tickets at Hot Tick for $12.50, but it's totally worth the time. And I highly, highly, highly recommend Cock at the Open Space Arts, directed by Rin Wesner.
There you go.
And that's the week.
That's the show.
You can listen to the Literate ApeCast on literateape.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you go to get that delicious podcast experience. If you enjoy the dulcet sounds of two white guys babbling about whatever comes into their stunted brains, leave us a review anywhere that, you know, reviews are left, and share it with someone whom which you have a dubious relationship.
For information about Literate Ape, go to literateape.com, of course, and check out the rest of our podcasts and our years of scribbling. The music on the ApeCast is courtesy of Mike Finopel and Local Motive. You can find them all over Chicago and online at localmotiveband.com.
the fuck?